Welcome to Political Rewind. It's 2:04 on a Wednesday afternoon, and as always, we're coming to you live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. With us today, Greg Bluestein, political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You read him just about every day. He files stories. Usually, what, do you file 2-3 a day, Bluestein?
Not a good day.
Close. thank you, Greg. We're always glad to have you here on the Wednesday show. Melita Easters is here. She is the executive director and the founding chair of the Georgia Win List, which is an organization dedicated to recruiting women candidates and supporting women candidates, predominantly for Democratic office, right?
Absolutely. Democratic pro-choice women.
All right. Thank you for that, Melita. I'm glad to have you back again.
Thank you.
And Heath Garrett joins us again. He is a longtime Republican strategist. He has worked with Senator Johnny Isaacson for years, decades, right? Is that basically fair?
I'd say 25 years.
Okay. We have a lot to talk about on the show today, but I want to start with something. You know, we started something on Monday's show. We started giving out a phone number. We can't do live calls at this point, but we want you to be able to record any comments you may want to make about the topics you're hearing. We're not going to talk a lot about that today because we're in pledge. We'll be in pledge on Friday. So we're really going to fire this up on next Monday's show. But because we did open the phone line on Monday, we got some calls. Senior producer Jenny Ammon put together just a sample of what you're calling to talk about. The first thing you'll hear is somebody responding to ads against John Ossoff in the 6th District race. The rest of them you'll get.
What really makes my Jewish nose twitch about the Republican ads is when they go, he's not one of us. Us, and them. Thanks, Bill.
Hi, Bill. Thank you for having a show about agriculture in Georgia.
I think the first 100 days of Donald Trump, our president, has done nothing but doing the same thing in which he has always done, that is being a carny con. That is my comment, and I will hear that hopefully on the show. This is what I believe.
So just a sampling of the callers who called that line. The number is 678-757-4472. 678-757-4472. Here's my advice. Don't talk for a long time. We will not use long statements. So try to come up with a short and pithy way to express your opinion. And by the way, I forgot to say on Monday, please leave us your name and where you're calling from. What city, what county, what part of the state. Again, short messages are always going to work best. Okay, and we'll start playing some more of those, especially as we get into next week. Let's start, Greg. Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, has now unveiled a blueprint for the president's plan, not for tax reform, but tax cuts. The larger tax reform package is still waiting. And this is being rushed out the door as part of this 100-day push to get something that they can talk proudly about. Yeah?
Yeah, we're only at the very beginnings of this process. But the plan would radically remake the tax code. It would slash the corporate tax rate and boost the standard deduction for individual taxpayers. It hasn't been scored yet. We haven't even gotten to the policy points of it yet. But this is kind of a let's get the debate started move.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even a bill at this stage. It's just an expression of what they hope to do. Again, reducing from 7 to 3 the number of tax brackets for individuals, but the top rate is still 35%, which is where it's at right now. And then a 15% rate for businesses. I turn to you because your boss, Johnny Isaacson, is going to have to deal with some version of this. And one of the concerns, if there's not real tax reform, is this proposal, people have suggested, could leave a deficit of $1 billion+ over a period of time.
There's no question, right? I mean, people are excited about this. If you're in business, if you're trying to grow the economy, and obviously this is the largest tax cut proposed in over 30 years. I think that it fulfills the president's pledge to do something like this. It is good. It is major reform in the sense that in order to pay for it, though, they're going to have to really change all these deductions, these tax credits, all the exemptions that kind of exist out there to get to these numbers. But it is, it's significant. Actually, you know, with the alternative minimum income tax, the top rate really is 39.6. So it's really a reduction on individuals all the way down and on all businesses, whether you're corporations or, most importantly, small businesses are getting a huge tax relief in this package as proposed. Big questions about scoring. What are they eliminating to pay for?
Make sure listeners know you're a legislative geek. What do you mean when you talk about scoring?
Scoring. So when we talk about any kind of legislative package, right, you bring the economist in and they start to talk about how much is it really going to cost in order to implement that legislation. And so that's when we talk about scoring.
Melita, the big question and what Democrats are, of course, going to get on with this thing is that they will say this is kind of magic realism, because what Mnuchin talks about is that this big tax reduction will be paid for in business growth. And I think Democrats have already begun making the point that there hasn't been a tax cut yet that, in fact, has spurred business enough to pay for what the tax cuts cost.
Well, I think always we have to worry about the deficit, and this tax cut would create a larger deficit. And both sides of the aisle need to be concerned about the state of the country's budget they will leave to their children and grandchildren. And Democrats will certainly make plenty of political hay with that argument.
So they're moving really, really fast this week because the 100th day is Saturday. The president has not had a lot to show for the first 100 days so far. And the other thing, so there's that. They've rolled that out. By the time Saturday night comes around and the president has his big rally, he'll be able to point to this. And, Greg, they are pushing like crazy. There's word today that the Freedom Caucus has essentially signed off on a compromise on a new health care bill. It's a bill, and one of the reasons they've signed off is that it gives the states an enormous amount of power to ask for waivers to some of the most powerful and popular aspects of Obamacare. For instance, pre-existing conditions. A state could ask for a waiver to not have to cover people with pre-existing conditions.
And this is what leaders in conservative states, conservative leaders of states have called for decades now, which is more flexibility in administering healthcare programs and block grants for these, some of these programs. And so this seems to be playing to those state leaders, including Governor Nathan Deal, and leaders of other red states who really raised objections about the last plan and how it would impose a lot of those costs and shift a lot of those costs to the states.
Yeah, it's possible, Melita, that, again, in an effort to give the president some ammunition for his first 100 days, that Speaker Ryan, although he said we're not going to call it until we know we have the votes, he could call for a vote between now and the end of business as late as Saturday if he wanted to hold them there. Is this thing, what's the response going to be on this?
Depending upon what the final look of that bill is and how it treats certain issues, it could be the greatest gift the Republicans could possibly give the Democratic Party, because there are certain parts of Obamacare that most people do not wish to be repealed. And it will certainly set up a very interesting set of elections in 2018.
Heath, do you think if this thing does go through the House, and it remains problematic, we don't know how the moderates are going to respond to this. This has been a help for conservatives to get on board, the Freedom Caucus to get on board. But if it does go through, does it worry you at all that they're going to move it so quickly that nobody's had a chance to study every aspect of it?
Well, I think there's always risk if you move too quickly on any major complicated piece of legislation like this. However, you know, we've been debating this now for 3 or 4 years in Washington, D.C. The House has passed versions of this multiple times. And so I think if you talk about devolving this back to the states, that's a core Republican principle and actually will appease a lot of Democratic governors, too, because health-insured individuals in states are very different in Georgia than they are in California and New York. So there's some real genius in this from a policy standpoint and a political standpoint if we can move it.
All right. We're going to watch to see if, in fact, the Speaker does call it for a vote. The one other thing we'll talk about in after on the other side of our break is the wall and where that stands. There seems to be some double talk going on about whether it's going to be part of a package or not in the continuing resolution. You can tweet us at PoliticsGPB if you want to be part of the conversation. The other way you can be part of this conversation is help support programs like Political Rewind. Keep us on the air. To do that, we need your support. We're in the middle of our pledge drive right now, and so I'm going to send you over to Bradley George and Tom Barclay, who are going to tell you how you can do that.
100 days, 100 nights to know a man.
Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings singing our theme song for the week, 100 Days. The Donald Trump administration coming up on that mark on Saturday. Very quickly, one other issue that we're watching closely this week is whether or not the continuing resolution is going to be slowed down because of a White House demand that there be a down payment on the wall, Greg Bluestein. Now, we've heard from any number of senior advisors that they've dropped that idea, that they're looking for border security as a starting point. And yet the president continues to tweet fake news. We are pushing for the wall. So the reality is we have no idea, but we don't think that's going to be in there.
Yeah, at this moment, we don't think that there will be a government shutdown. It looks like the demand for a wall funding immediately has been sidelined, but that is not to say that the long-term goal for a wall has been sidelined because, as Trump has made it very clear, it's still at the top of his wish list.
All right, let's go right to the 6th District race. I think every show between now and the June 20th runoff, there's going to be plenty of news to update on that race. And as long as we're talking about President Trump, Melita, the president will be in town Friday to speak to the National Rifle Association. And while he's here, he's going to do a fundraiser for Karen Handel. Good for Karen in terms of money, yes, but what about the politics?
I think it will further harm her brand, which is already badly damaged. You know, when she ran for governor, she came very close in the runoff with Nathan Deal. But then when she ran for the U.S. Senate, after the Susan G. Komen fiasco, which badly damaged her brand amongst women, she had a hard time in that race. She didn't make the runoff. And in the three counties which comprise the 6th district, she didn't get above 35% back then. So Karen Handel has a lot of ground to make up for in the 6th district, where her brand and where her personality is on display on the ballot box.
Heath, we learned the other day that in the first vote on April 18th, 1 in 5 Republicans actually voted against the Republican candidates for John Ossoff. So I don't think Karen Handel has much choice about, you know, at first the question was, is she going to embrace him, stay away? She kept an arm's length distance from him during the first round. But she can't not deal with him, right? She can't win avoiding him. She can't win being with him, perhaps.
That's right. And I think there's no way, if you're a Republican today, it may be a fine line you have to walk, but you can't run away from this president, particularly in a district like the 6th district. And in some respects, the entire election has been about Donald Trump to this date anyway. And she's already got all of the, quote, baggage that you might talk about politically with Donald Trump. So she needs to embrace what she can, raise as much money in that regard. She does have a little bit of latitude in the 6th district to distance herself from some of Trump personality and or style and or a couple of issues. If she wants to and does it intelligently, she could do that. But you've got, it's a fine line for these candidates to walk. But I think she can do it in the 6th. It's the most educated of all Republican districts in the country. And so I think there's some latitude for her.
Greg, it strikes me that if you're a pollster working for Karen Handel, there's a lot of money to be made doing just what Heath Garrett's talking about. Finding out what voters want to, in terms of distance from Trump on some things and an embrace on other issues.
And you saw that with the last health care plan. You saw a very big split among the Republican candidates. You had some like Judson Hill who were saying that they were against the plan. And you had some like Bob Gray and Dan Moody who said they were for it. And you had Karen trying to walk that line there saying, she wasn't specific on it, but she was saying, I think we need to repeal Obamacare somehow, some way, and I'll figure out how to do that when I get up there, was her answer. I think she was in a bind. There was no good answer. I think that if she hadn't showed up to an event with Donald Trump, that would, our headline the next day was, would be Karen Handel distance herself from Donald Trump. And if she has, it's going to be Karen Handel ties herself to
so
Donald Trump.
In other words, go ahead, do the fundraiser and raise as much money as you possibly can. And by the way, Greg, Karen Handel, we've made this point before, has never been a particularly effective fundraiser. The money is starting to roll in. You reported that there's a super PAC that's putting an additional,
$3.5 million from a super PAC with ties to House Speaker Ryan. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce yesterday endorsed her as well. They didn't have a dollar figure, but I'd be shocked if it wasn't seven figures plus for them. And Karen Handel's campaign itself has already raised more than $1 million in the last 7 days, which was more than double than she raised the first 3 months of this campaign.
You know, Melita, in some ways, I think everybody's responding on the Republican side this quickly and with these big checks because they saw how Democrats came to the aid of Ossoff in the first round, $8.3 million. The stakes have escalated to outrageous proportions.
Well, this is a very, very expensive race. But because it is seen as the tip of the spear of the resistance to Trump, Democrats are willing to make that investment. And they see in Ossoff an exciting young candidate who is appealing to voters who were not motivated in the last presidential election. And voters Democrats want to reliably have on their side for decades to come.
And let's be clear, too, Ossoff isn't he's not getting outgunned in this department, I don't
think.
The DNC, the DCCC, and Ossoff's campaign, I'd be shocked if he is not at this point. I mean, the disclosures aren't going to be out for another couple of weeks, but I'd be shocked if he has less than $10 million
I'm only responding to reports we've already seen on some of the money that's coming in to handle, perhaps, Heath, the most expensive congressional race in American history.
Absolutely on target for the most expensive, and it really has been nationalized, and you're going to see both parties expend tens of millions of dollars in independent expenditures and through the campaigns. You're going to have volunteers on the Republican side and the Democratic side from all 50 states going door to door. I mean, it's like a grudge match in a wrestling, television show. It's going to be fascinating political science.
All right.
Here we go.
Well, and I think the Democratic volunteers, and there are many, many, many volunteers. They're not all paid, as the Dunwoody Crier would have you believe. They are excited about their candidate. And I think on the Republican side, there's not so much excitement about the candidate as the party.
All right. We're going to stop for and reset. We're going to talk a little more about the 6th District race. We got a new entrant into the gubernatorial race. We'll talk about that and more. But, it's interesting. The people who are really benefiting from the 6th District race are the TV stations in Atlanta. I mean, Channel 2, Channel 5, Channel 11, 46. You know who's not? GPB. You know why? Because we don't accept advertising. And we're free to people who want to listen to our programming, which is why during this pledge drive, I'm going to turn you over to Bradley George and Tom Barclay to tell you why it's so important you support us, and they'll tell you how. Welcome back to Political Rewind. Greg Bluestein, Melita Easters, Heath Garrett here on the show today. Again, if you want to leave us a recorded comment about politics today, make it a brief message. It'll give you more chance of actually getting on the air. Do it at 678-757-4472, 678-757-4472. But we encourage you to continue to tweet us at PoliticsGPB. And I really just want to go back very quickly, because when the show ended the other day, we got a tweet from Ross Hardy, who tweets at Georgia Wonk. Brian Robinson was on Monday's show. Typically, Theron Johnson's here with him. He couldn't be. And so Ross Hardy tweeted, "Hearing Brian Robinson on Politics GPB without Theron Johnson is like hearing a Queen song without backing vocals. Still good, but missing something." I thought that was worth sharing with you all. Melita, when the president comes on Friday to talk to NRA, there's going to be a counter demonstration. Can you tell us about it?
It's a die-in at Woodruff Park, where they plan to have, and people who are coming to the demonstration are being told to wear black. And if they're wearing clothes that are too nice to lay on the ground in, to bring their own blanket. And they'll have 90 plus people lying on the grass in Woodruff Park to demonstrate the number of people who are killed by gun violence every day in this country.
And so let's talk about that for a minute. We've seen a number of demonstrations pop up, anti-Trump demonstrations pop up all over the country for weeks now. Now, in town meetings with members of Congress, it strikes me that there's a lot of resonance to those things when people get up and actually talk to their members. There are people who think that demonstrations of this sort end up being counterproductive, that they turn off a large segment of the people. I would guess you don't agree with that. I'm wondering what you think, Keith.
Well, there's no question. I think one of the mistakes the Democratic Party and the anti-Trump movement are doing is kind of like Chicken Little. The sky is always falling on everything, and it's kind of like thou dost protest us too much. I mean, at a certain point in time, you're losing your efficacy when you protest everything he does, every time he says anything. You know, there's got to be some prioritization.
Melita?
I think that the NRA and Trump are so intertwined that this particular protest gives rise to the sentiment in this country that it's not about the Second Amendment anymore. It's about protecting the gun industry and the manufacture of weapons. And in many ways, when you have school children slaughtered by lone gunmen, and, you know, there have to be some common sense solutions to the gun violence problem in this country, which is worse than in many other developed countries. And so I don't know that this is a protest I would put into that category.
Gotcha.
Of too much.
Okay, so there are, I don't mean this as a pun at all, but targeted protesting in a situation like this could be meaningful as a demonstration of, okay. Greg, how does something like that get covered? I mean, Trump will have the top of the front page of the AJC on Saturday morning. Where you don't know if there's no, I suppose, if there's violence, if there's confrontation, the protesters could get more coverage. But are they going to share space on the front page if you're making that editorial decision?
It depends on the number and in the intensity of the protest. I mean, I know we're devoting resources. I'm sure all the TV stations will have resources. It's actually that protest is at Woodruff Park, which is not all that close. It's not that far, but it's not right next door to the World Congress Center either. So it's a little harder for those of us who will be in the World Congress Center to jot out. Not that we could do so anyway. But this will be a very telling event for Donald Trump. I mean, this is the first time a sitting president, has addressed the NRA since 1983 when Ronald Reagan did it. And the NRA, although they did endorse him, they didn't endorse him until later last year, until really after most of the primary battles were long done and gone. So this will be a very interesting speech for him, and it is also happening at the same time where Georgia's Governor Deal is debating whether to sign the campus carry bill.
Yeah, we've had a couple people tweet us saying, when is Governor Deal going to make a decision on campus carry? And the answer we've tweeted back has always been, certainly not before NRA comes to town and leaves.
That's right. I don't have any inside information, right? I know that's being considered. Wouldn't be surprised if something happened while they were here for optics and those
kind
of things. But you never know.
So if he's going to sign it, you might imagine he'd do it while NRA is here. If he's going to veto it, would you do it, Greg, or Melita, before they
leave? You would not veto it while they're here.
My hunch, presuming that he wasn't vetoing.
Yeah, and Governor Deal will speak at the event. He's going to have, I think what I've been told is some sort of opening speech on Friday morning. My hunch is that he hasn't actually spoken publicly really at all about campus carry in a while. But my hunch is still he'll sign it. But you never know.
Never know. By the way, talking about demonstrators, the invitation for the Donald Trump fundraising event is, it's interesting in terms of worrying about if you're the president's people, if you're a Republican, about demonstrators. It has a line in it. It tells us the date, of course, the time, what time the program begins. But it also says, essentially, address provided upon RSVP. They are not putting out the address of this fundraiser, although I wouldn't bet it won't become public pretty quickly.
Oh, I'm sure it'll become public. Somebody lower down on the food chain will let that slip. But, you know, the president has to become accustomed to the kinds of protests that his own party gave President Obama for the full 8 years he was in office.
Yeah. Greg, makes your life harder. You got to figure out where the heck this event is. You're not going to get in, are you?
No,
they're
going
to keep this event closed to the dishonest news media, aren't they?
I did my level best. I asked if I could get in, not thinking I would, and I was told pretty much no. But no, I do probably need to ask where the protest is going to be.
All right, that's Friday. It's going to be fascinating. We'll be on the air at 3 o'clock, so we'll probably have some pretty good reporting by then on how that day is unfolding for the president on Political Rewind. Look, we're going to take one more break before the end of the show, because we're coming down to the final days of our drive when we are looking for your help. If you have already given your contribution, thank you. Thank you so much, because you help sustain this program on Second Thought and all the NPR shows that you tell us you love. If you haven't, here's Bradley and Tom to tell you how you can become a part of our team. We are back on Political Rewind with Republican strategist Heath Garrett, Melita Easters, the director of the Georgia Win List, which recruits women Democrats, pro-choice Democrats, to run for office, and our friend Greg Bluestein, political reporter for the AJC, who I was commiserating. He loves it. When I was his age, I loved going to the Penn to wait 2.5-3 hours in advance for the president to come. I'm glad I'm not there, but you'll be doing that Friday.
I'd say probably 4 hours before.
Yeah, that's probably right.
That's my time to talk to voters.
And you're locked down. Yeah. So anyhow, we'll probably ask you to give us some kind of a report from down there. So
we'll do.
All right. Greg, State Senator Hunter Hill has told you that he is going to run for governor. He's going to announce, I think, next week. Who is Hunter Hill?
Hunter Hill is a, he was first elected to the state Senate in 2012. He is a West Point grad, Iraq and Afghanistan Army combat veteran, a pretty conservative Republican running in a fast-changing Senate district based in Buckhead and in parts of Cobb County. He barely won re-election just in November, so I think he saw kind of the writing was on the wall. He either has to move out or move up. And so I think he's going for, well, he is definitely running for governor in what I think is going to be a ridiculously crowded field. I think this was a very big sign that Casey Cagle is not really scaring anyone off who might be a challenger, especially in his own chamber.
Casey Cagle will announce also the lieutenant governor, who has essentially wanted to be governor for at least a decade and is finally really getting a clear field, at least in terms of no incumbent, to do that. He'll announce. Brian Kemp, Secretary of State, has already announced. And we've talked about them a little. We'll talk about them a lot more. But, Melita, Heath, help me on this. When someone like a Hunter Hill steps in, and let me start with you, Heath. He is not known to most of the people in Georgia. How tricky, how challenging is his road to winning the nomination going to be?
Well, as you know, we're a large state, almost 12 million residents, one of the most expensive media markets. Hunter Hill is viewed as one of the rising stars in the Republican caucus.
Sure.
The Senate has a great story with West Point, tours of duty, 2 Bronze Stars. If he can raise the money to get that story and that message out and he's running as a principled conservative, a little bit to the right of both Casey Cagle and Brian Kemp, at least that's where he's going to try to position himself. If he can raise that $1 million to $2 million to get him at the table, then he has a pathway, and he's got to get out there. You can work the grassroots, you can travel the state, but if you can't be live on television and print and on the radio, then I think that's the big challenge for him. Can he get there and get that name recognition up?
Melita, your organization works hard to find women to run for office, and Stacey Abrams is almost certainly, I don't think there's any question, that the minority leader in the House is going to run for governor. But there's been talk that Democrat House member Stacey Evans might jump into the race as well. Is it fine with you if you have 2 women competing in that race?
Well, we would always prefer to have just one, but there might be 3 women who are obviously considering. Also, Columbus Mayor Teresa Tomlinson.
Oh, that's right. Teresa Tomlinson's talked about
it. So it would be very interesting to see the women on the Democratic side and basically some iteration of the smart-ass white boy club on the other side, on the Republican side. And I think it will shake down so that we have a strong Democratic ticket that is diverse in comparison to the pale male patriarchy you certainly currently have under the Georgia Gold Dome.
Wow. There's, you know,
now we're ignoring Karen Handel here, right?
Well, she's going to be trying to be the congresswoman, remember?
While the race is going on, we got a little diversity.
Which, by the way, as long as you brought up Karen Handel again, Greg, what, you know, one thing that Karen Handel does have going for her is that if she wins this, she can look for votes by saying she would be the first female congresswoman in the state of Georgia.
First Republican.
That's what I meant. Is first Republican.
And we talked to a lot of voters last week on Tuesday who did vote for her with a sense of history, saying that they wanted that first woman GOP member of Congress from Georgia. But on the governor's side, I have not heard on the Republican side. I'm trying to think right now. I don't think I've heard of any female Republican contenders really whose names are out there. In what could be a ridiculously, as I said earlier,
why do you think it's going to be such a? Is it going to be a really crowded field? Do you think? And he's over there nodding as well.
I think part of it might be the Trump effect, in that you know, look how crowded the mayor's race is right now. Look how crowded the 6th district race was with 11 Republicans and 18 candidates overall. Also, again, I think that Casey Cagle, as the presumptive frontrunner, I keep on hearing from potential challengers that he's the John Oxendine of 18, that he's the presumptive frontrunner who's kind of, he's easily toppled. I don't know if that's true. We'll find out in the next year or so. But there's a lot of people who think he's very vulnerable.
Oh, Heath, to call somebody, tag him as the John Oxendine of 2018 is not a very good thing. We all remember that Oxendine was way out front in the early presumed nominee of the Republican Party and just collapsed, imploded.
That's right. I think Casey Cagle is not a John Oxendine, but in reality, too, he's not a Johnny Isaacson or a Sonny Perdue. He does not have the ability to clear the field the way that a true front runner would. So, yes, he's a presumptive front runner, but there's no question that a lot of Republicans view the field still as wide open. Brian Kemp has a good rural network and some name recognition, but nobody views any of the current contenders as the person who is going to clear the field. I do think we're going to see a lot of candidates come forward in the next 6 months.
You don't have very many women on your Republican bench, you got to say.
That's right. And I think, look, we as Republicans, obviously, as we look at the diversity gap, the gender gap, the generational gap, the 6th district's playing in a little bit into it. Karen's a great spokeswoman for that cause, but Republicans have got to find ways to appeal to those three gaps in the future.
All right. We are out of time for today's Political Rewind. Heath Garrett, Melita Easters, Greg Bluestein, really, thank you for what I thought was a terrific conversation today. Thank you to Jenny Ament, to Tyler Morris, and to Lise Clark behind the glass running things in the control room. I'm Bill Nygut. We'll be back with you on Friday at 3 o'clock. In the meantime, I'm turning it back over to Tom Barclay and Bradley George to ask you one last time today from our show, please help support GPB.